Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Pi did a come about.
Let's have a bit of history.
It is not black and white, is it?
That raises big questions.
There are repercussions around the world.
It's a hugely complicated picture.
The official narrative is somewhat different.
For a greater understanding of the stories affecting our lives, search for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Thanks for choosing to listen to Assignment on the documentary podcast from the BBC World Service. In this episode, I'm reporting from Kazakhstan, where I've come to find out why the Caspian Sea is shrinking at unprecedented speed and what it means for this region.
Right, can we get up here?
I'm just climbing up some wooden steps onto this old pier. The bottom few steps are missing because, well, it's not really a pier anymore because it's nowhere near the sea. Azamat, do you remember when this pier was in the sea, as it should be?
Well, we were here in around 2006, 2008. There'd been new Ulubets and other young people. You'd see lots of people sitting here and walking along the pier.
Azamat Sarsambayev is an activist and social media influencer from the Kazakh city of Aktau, on the eastern shores of the Caspian Sea, the world's largest inland body of water. A compact 34-year-old with short black hair and a boyish face, Azamat posts about local environmental and social issues, particularly what's happening to the sea.
Летом до поздней ночи здесь...
We'd be sitting here talking in the summer until late at night. It was a very popular place, especially in the evenings, in summer, or around lunchtime. Young people of the city would gather, and from here we'd stand on the railings and jump into the water.
Azamat's saying that as a teenager, he used to stand on this pier and dive into the clear blue waters of the Caspian Sea. And that is staggeringly hard to believe, because from where I'm standing at the end of this old wooden pier, it's at least 70 metres to where the waves are breaking along the shoreline. The sea has receded that far in less than 20 years. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Antonia Bolingbroke-Kent, and for Assignment, I've come to the Central Asian country of Kazakhstan, formerly part of the Soviet Union, to find out why the Caspian Sea is in crisis and what it means for this coastal community and the wider region's ecology. Azamat, who has 32,000 Instagram followers, uses a drone to shoot footage of the receding shoreline. He's deeply upset about what's happening.
This is very hard for me. As a local who... How can I explain it? For a boy who used to swim here, growing up, jumping in the water and so on, it's very hard to accept that familiar places have gone.
Azamat's social media posts have made him well known in Aktau, which was founded in the late 1950s as a uranium mining settlement. Today the city is home to almost 300,000 people, and the region's vast deposits of oil and gas mean it's still growing fast. The Caspian Sea, which is roughly the size of Germany, is bordered by five countries: Kazakhstan, Russia, Iran, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan. Kazakhstan's section is both the longest and the shallowest. There are a number of different theories as to why the sea, sometimes described as a lake, is shrinking. But one I hear again and again is that it's part of a natural cycle, that the Caspian breathes, that its levels have always fluctuated. Many locals remember the water being this low in the late 1970s, then recovering by the 90s. It's a fair point, given that people in northern Kazakhstan and across the border in Russia suffered devastating floods this April. But here, around 1,000 kilometres south, it's hot and very dry. Because it's such a windy day, we've just come down below the pier to try and get some shelter from the wind. Azamat, a lot of people seem to believe in this cyclical theory, particularly older people. What do you think about the theory?
Ну, наверное, цикличность
I guess there is some truth in the cyclicality. But the people who support that theory are wrong about one thing. Yes, in 1977, the Caspian Sea was at a similar level to now, maybe a bit higher, but that's not the point. If you think about it logically, it's almost 50 years since 1977, and the world population has doubled in that time.
And then, he says, there's the matter of Russia overly exploiting the two main rivers that feed the Caspian Sea.
На главных артериях, питающих Каспийское море, реках, это Волга и Урал.
The Volga and the Ural are the main rivers feeding the Caspian Sea. Half of Russia's population lives along the Volga River, which accounts for 80% of the water flowing into the Caspian Sea. And imagine how many businesses there are there that are using this water. How many people, households, restaurants, how many millions of people use billions of cubic meters of water every day?
Last year, Azamat drove 5,000 kilometres in order to document what's happening in the Volga Basin and on the Russian shores of the Caspian Sea. Yeah, Azamat's showing me footage of the Kuybyshev Reservoir on his phone, and it is an absolutely vast body of water. Did you see lots of dams on the Volga?
Да, очень много дам.
Lots of, so there are, you saw очень, lots and lots of dams on the Volga.
По Волге, да-да, я снимал все это.
I filmed all this at my own risk, with a drone.
На дрон?
But surely Russia would argue that they have got to provide water for their own population.
Ну, это понятно, да. Но с другой стороны...
It's understandable, yes. But on the other hand, there are other countries that use this water too. So I think it is necessary for all the countries of the Caspian Sea to sit down and come to an agreement that the Russian side should regulate its water consumption from the Volga River.
I'm in a taxi on the way to Aktau Port, the largest in Kazakhstan. And it's rush hour. Our driver is dashing in and out of heavy traffic. We're driving south along the seafront, the Caspian Sea glimmering to our right. And all along the shoreline are the bones of these half-built high-rises, while to our left are rows of Khrushchevkas, the classic Soviet apartment blocks. It's a sunny morning, as always in Aktau. There is never a cloud in the sky here. Wow, look at all those oil terminals. I've come to the port to find out how shipping is being impacted by the shrinking sea and to meet the chief engineer, Amir Atambayev, a tall, serious man with greying hair. It's a blustery day and many of the cranes are standing idle. But one thing the wind hasn't stopped is vital work scraping, or cleaning, as Amir calls it, the seabed.
Over the last 4 years, the level of the Caspian Sea has dropped by almost a meter. Every year, there's a reduction of about 23 to 25 centimeters.
And when did you start doing this work to make the port deeper?
We started this cleaning process 4 years ago now, as soon as the rate of shallowing increased.
The crane is lifting this giant metal claw, which it then lowers down onto the seabed, grabs a load of silt from the bottom of the sea, and then is bringing it up and emptying it into the back of a truck to deepen the port to allow ships to berth. Why do you think it's shallowing so much?
The main reason is that the falling and rising of the Caspian Sea is a cyclical process that happens periodically.
At first, Amir cites the well-worn cyclical theory, but when I press him on this, he admits climate change is a factor.
Scientists say that in the last 20 years, the average temperature of the Earth's atmosphere has increased. Naturally, this leads to an increase in the evaporation of water from the surface of the Caspian Sea.
Amir and I have got into a van to go to a different part of the port. There's a very large security team with us, and we're all having to wear hard hats and high vis. The Kazakh economy is underpinned by the country's huge deposits of oil and gas, increasing amounts of which are being redirected through Aktau's port following Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
The main cargo which goes through this port is oil. In the last 2 years, due to the events in Ukraine, oil volumes are slowly starting to increase.
Can you explain why that is? Why has Russia's invasion of Ukraine had such an impact on cargo coming through this port, through this middle corridor, as it's called?
Because the companies that are involved in the transport of goods and producers of goods are choosing safer routes. In addition, sanctions are being imposed, which these companies want to avoid. Now the route through Baku is being used.
What Amir is saying is that sending goods across the Caspian Sea is the easiest way to avoid Russia. It's fairly inconvenient for the port that at the same time you're getting this huge increase in trade through here. The sea level is decreasing and making your life a lot harder.
At present, because of the shallowing of the Caspian, the vessels are not loaded to their full capacity. We have 12,000-ton tankers here. Currently, we can load them up to 10,000 tons.
That's quite a shortfall and means higher transport costs. Amir tells me they're planning a major project next year to dredge the seabed in order to make it deeper and allow ships to be fully loaded again. The Caspian Sea isn't just important for trade, it's also home to rare and endemic species such as the Caspian seal and 90% of the world's wild sturgeon. Since leaving Aktau about 3 hours ago, we've been driving northwest along an arrow straight road across the steppe, just nothing but wide open scrubby desert, the odd herd of horses, young foals basking in the sunshine, and this huge blue cloudless sky. The road has now ended and we're bumping along a dirt track to the Tupkarigan Peninsula and a place called the Polygon, where local fishermen have collected 25 or so Caspian seal carcasses. A seal. Can I ask what you're discussing?
Yeah, we're discussing about the condition of the seals. The seal is decomposed.
I'm here with Asil Baymukhanova from Kazakhstan's Institute of Hydrobiology and Ecology. In her early 30s, she's passionate about Caspian seals and has dedicated her life to researching them.
Oh my goodness, the smell. Whoa. If you can imagine the strongest stench of rotten fish, that's what I'm smelling now. There is a pile of decaying carcasses.
We want to collect the fur and the fat of the seals and the organs of the seals.
Listed as endangered by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, it's thought there could be as few as 100,000 Caspian seals remaining, with their numbers declining year on year.
The last data was that the seal population was decreased in 2023 for 25%.
They decreased by 25% last year alone. That's massive. It must be difficult to see this.
Yes, it's very difficult. But I need to find the way to understand why they died. This is my job.
Asiel and her team put on protective suits and begin the gruesome work of cutting open the seals and collecting samples. It'll take about 3 months to get the results. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Press freedom. The reasons why it's under increasing pressure.
How the mass use of drones has changed the way the war is being fought.
The trends behind the fast-changing media landscape.
The Explanation from the BBC World Service takes a deep dive into the big stories affecting our lives, giving you an honest, unvarnished explanation of the world. Search for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Antonia Bolingbroke-Kent on assignment in Kazakhstan. One of the fishermen who told Asil about the dead seals is Daniil Akimjanov, the head of the Regional Fishing Association, which has around 800 members. He's offered to take me out on his boat.
So, Daniel, where we're walking to get to your boat, this all used to be the sea?
Yes.
This was all the sea?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be quite a squeeze. There's 35-year-old Daniel wearing a smart shirt and trousers in spite of the rather rough seas, plus a friend of his who's come to drive the boat. Then there's me, my producer Caroline, our translator, and even our driver, Aslan, who's keen to come for the ride. We all need to be... it's going to be best, I think, if we sit here. Yeah, it helps, Irina. It's a narrow metal boat with no seats, and the waves are building up. It's surprisingly choppy. We've just turned off the engine to drift for a bit, but we're all quite wet already, even after 5 minutes on the boat. Daniel, how many generations of your family have been fishermen?
All our family are locals, and my father, grandfather and great-grandfathers all worked in the fishing industry. And we hope that my children will also work in fishing, if the Caspian Sea is still there.
That's a really interesting thing to say. Are you that concerned about the falling levels of the Caspian Sea that you worry it could disappear altogether here?
All the local citizens and those of our country, as well as all five countries which border the Caspian, we are all concerned about the future of the Caspian Sea. It was 5 or 6 years ago when I first noticed that the sea level was falling, and we started thinking it was a serious problem.
We're drifting in the middle of Baltino Bay, which is a couple of kilometres wide, and the sea is this Caribbean turquoise colour. Daniel, have you seen fish stocks decline dramatically in your lifetime?
Yes, of course. The number of fish is declining. There used to be more fish and more different types of fish. And now we don't see some fish which we used to have in this part of the Caspian Sea.
As a fisherman, are you and other fishermen here in Baltino worried about the impact of the shallowing sea on your livelihoods?
Yes, because the shallowing of the sea has affected the nearby places that local fishermen used to go to fish. It's now very difficult to fish there because the sea level has fallen.
So why can't they fish? Is it too shallow? You can't get your boats in?
The places where we used to go to fish have now mostly become islands, and there is no water. We can't go by boat. If there is no water, there is no fish.
Baltino, as well as being a fishing community, is also a logistics hub for the giant offshore Kashagan oil field, the largest outside the Middle East. By now, we've drifted right across the bay to where a big white ship is moored. Daniel tells me it takes oil workers to Kashagan. With the engine back on, we speed back, soaking wet, all holding on tightly. Daniel is also really concerned about the fact so many Caspian seals are dying. A few days after first meeting Asiel, she contacts me to say they've discovered even more carcasses. I'm just walking along the beach near Fort Shevchenko. I've been trying to find Asiel for a few hours. Her car is about 100 metres ahead of us now. And as I walk along the shoreline, there are dead seals floating in the shallows. It's a horrible sight. When I reach Asiel, she's busy collecting samples from dead seals. There's dead seals everywhere, aren't there?
Yes, seals everywhere. We found 67 seals yesterday and day before.
Do you have any, hunch, any suspicion of what you think the reasons could be?
It can be the pollution, it can be the infections or viruses, and we don't know yet about the reasons.
How much do you think the shallowing of the Caspian Sea is impacting the seals?
I'm doing research of Caspian seal behavior. We trying to find how they adapt to the changed environment and how the regression affects the seals now. We know that seals trying to find the new islands to haul in out.
What's a haul out?
It's a place and island where the seals are lying to molt and to rest. We know that one haul out disappeared, and the situation in Caspian Sea is changing every month, every year.
It's not just sea levels that are changing. Warmer winters are leading to less ice cover, making it harder for the pups to survive. A few days later, I meet another ecologist specialising in the Caspian Sea, also called Asiel, over a video call. Asiel Tazmagambietova, the daughter of a former Kazakh prime minister, has set up her own privately financed organisation, the Central Asian Institute for Ecological Research. She believes climate change, higher evaporation, and the damming and overextraction of Russia's rivers are all key factors.
The inflow of rivers into the Caspian Sea, especially the Volga River, has diminished over time. Extensive dam construction on the Volga River, initiated during Soviet industrialization, also greatly reduced water flow into the sea.
There's also the impact of the oil and gas industry on both the seabed and the seals.
The removal of large volumes of oil and natural gas from beneath the seafloor can cause compaction of the seabed, potentially affecting water depths. We've held around 8 expeditions. What we see that in all water samples of heavy substances exceeds the limits of concentration by 7 times. There are a lot of heavy metals in the Caspian seals. So yes, of course, the major contaminants, they come from oil and gas industry.
We put this allegation to Kazakhstan's Ministry of Energy, but they didn't respond. We also contacted Russia's Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment regarding the Volga. They didn't reply either. Asiel says that the Caspian Sea has dropped by 4 meters since the year 2000, and she's extremely concerned about predictions made by a group of German and Dutch scientists.
Our colleagues from Germany and the Netherlands have projected that under current trends, the Caspian Sea's water levels could drop an additional 9 to 18 meters by the end of this century, meaning the lake would lose 25% of its size, an area roughly the size of Portugal.
That would have a catastrophic impact on this whole region, surely.
Yes, that's true. I think it's a very serious problem. We already lost the Aral Sea, and the Caspian Sea can be the next one. I guess we have to prepare the region for these big changes.
The Aral Sea looms large in the Kazakh imagination. Straddling Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, and once the fourth largest inland body of water on Earth, it's now almost entirely disappeared, largely due to so much of its water being diverted for irrigation during Soviet times. Last June, the authorities in western Kazakhstan's Mangistau region, of which Aktau is the capital, declared a state of emergency over the Caspian Sea. Aktau, you see, has no natural water sources and relies almost entirely on desalinated water. The more the Caspian's levels fall, the more precarious this supply becomes, and the authorities needed to act. I met Nurlan Nagayev, governor of Mangistau. Since our interview, he's been relieved of his post. Antonio, очень приятно.
Nurlan, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
I want to talk to Mr. Nagayev about the state of emergency and Aktau's water supply. He agrees to do the interview in English with a little help from our translator, Tatiana.
So what happened in 2023 to motivate you to declare a state of emergency?
It was necessary to make the project for... Дно углубительной работы на для канала, поставляющего воду из моря.
Yeah, make the channel deeper that can give us water to the desalination plant.
It was preparing works to avoid the probably dangerous situation.
Declaring a state of emergency meant that state funds could be diverted and quickly to deepen the channel that brings water from the sea to Aktau's desalination plant. a channel the city relies on to survive. What else, I ask, concerns him about the falling sea levels?
It's some challenge for us, but we have plan. In 2022, our president, Kasım Jomart Tokayev, visited our region. He gave to us to government to establish research institute, and they will monitoring and they will making any other activities to know what will happen with Caspian Sea, what will happen in future. Nobody knows.
What more do you think can be done by not only the Kazakh government but by all the Caspian littoral states? Can anything be done? Do you think the problem is much bigger and it's climate change?
Leaders of the countries bordering with Caspian Sea, they have one intent to solve this problem. How we can say, I think it's the scientists' decisions.
However, this research institute isn't yet up and running, and there are very few Kazakh scientists working on the Caspian problem. There's also the question of relations with Russia, which have been, well, delicate following Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Wanting to understand more about Russia's role in all of this and the nature of Russian-Kazakh relations, I have a video call with Almaty-based political analyst Dimash Aljanov, an opposition figure in Kazakhstan, about whether the war has made cooperation more difficult.
Well, first of all, Kazakhstan not setting this issue into the agenda. Secondly, of course, all this situation in Ukraine completely changed the nature of relations, the priorities between the two governments. And I think that as long as the war is going and the international attention is not on the Caspian Sea, this issue will not be pushed by the Kazakhstan, neither picked by the Russian.
I ask Dimash how aware Kazakhs are about the problems with the Caspian Sea. Certainly the majority of local people I spoke with in Aktau believe the sea levels would rise again one day, as they have in the past. But perhaps that's easier than accepting you're witnessing an unfolding catastrophe.
You see, there is not much attention or the push from the bottom, from the society, on this issue. And the people mainly living in the other regions of Kazakhstan, they are not aware of the problem. This is a problem also connected with freedom of speech. There is no free media. There is no free circulation of information. So you shouldn't expect the society properly informed.
This makes it all the more surprising that people like Azamat, the influencer we met at the beginning of the programme, post so regularly about the crisis.
We've walked about half a mile south in the pier, and Azamat's telling me this used to be another of his favourite swimming spots where he would jump off the rocks into the sea. And you certainly couldn't jump off these rocks into the sea anymore.
Azamat's got his drone out again to take more shots of the shrinking shoreline. At the moment, there seem to be few real solutions in play. Iran raised the alarm with the UN last year, and there is some cooperation between the Caspian states and plans for this new Caspian Sea Research Institute here in Aktau. But perhaps the biggest problem is climate change, which isn't something Kazakhstan can tackle alone, particularly while its economy is so dependent on oil and gas. For Azamat, though, it's all about raising awareness.
I'm afraid the sea might disappear altogether. It's very hard for me to accept that. So, through our efforts, I really want this whole process to be reversed. I want to draw it to the attention of people and to the state authorities who could help reverse the situation. The main motivation for me now is that I want my children to be like I was once, when I was a child swimming in the Caspian Sea, and to tell their children about it, my grandchildren. I want those sensations to be experienced the way I once experienced the Caspian Sea.
Assignment was presented by me, Antonia Bolingbroke-Kent. The producer was Caroline Bailey, the editor was Penny Murphy, and the programme was mixed by Rod Farker.
press freedom, the reasons why it's under increasing pressure.
How the mass use of drones has changed the way the war is being fought.
The trends behind the fast-changing media landscape.
The Explanation from the BBC World Service takes a deep dive into the big stories affecting our lives, giving you an honest, unvarnished explanation of the world. Search for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.